Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Nancy Giles, in for Allison Stewart. We've all heard this old and some would say offensive adage, a woman's place is in the kitchen. It's a long-held belief that domestic work is just within the purview of women. But when we look at the people who have received the most recognition throughout history for culinary prowess, it's mostly men. Our next guests took a deep dive into all the ways that women throughout history and all over the world have contributed to the food we eat, and the ripples of those contributions can be felt far outside of the kitchen and away from the dinner table. We're joined by Steph Ferrari in studio and Deepi Alawalia over the phone. Together they wrote A Woman's Place, the inventors, rum runners, lawn breakers, scientists, and single moms who changed the world with food. It's part history and part cookbook, and they're here to talk about it with us. Steph and Deepi, welcome to All of It.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
It's, well, number one, just off the bat, it is a beautiful, incredible book. It even just feels good to hold in my hand, which I'm doing right here in studio. Tell me how the two of you met and how you got at the idea for this book, A Woman's Place.
Sure, I'll jump in. This is Steph. Deepi and I met about 4 years ago. I act as senior editor for a small culinary publication called Life and Time, based in LA, and Deepi has been contributing to that publication as a columnist, a writer, and a photographer for longer, actually, than I've been a part of the organization. So we've been working together on that front for all this time, and it's just been such an incredible partnership that we couldn't get enough of each other, so we decided to keep
I hear you laughing, Deepi. You want to chime in on that?
I mean, I totally agree. I mean, when you're lucky to work with someone who's as intelligent and just in it when it comes to the food world as Steph, it's always a pleasure. And she's making me, has made me look good and sound good for a number of years by editing my work. And it was just a natural partnership to come together and to write a book about women in a time when the whole Me Too movement was just kicking off. And we were just fired up and wanted to play our part in the entire women's movement. And so we had this brainchild and here we are today.
Was this Me Too moment that we're having, was that part of what made you feel like these stories really needed to be told now?
You know, I think the idea for the book and the movement kind of happened simultaneously.
Okay.
Although, of course, Me Too has been around a lot longer than I think, you know, some people even recognize.
Before had a name.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But Deepi and I had been, it was about November 2017 when we were sitting down and having coffee, and kind of the idea was starting to germinate. And it was right around then that the culinary world started to feel the ripples of Me Too, and we were starting to see scandals coming out, and women were coming forward with some really horrific stories about their experience in the food world. And anyway, you know, that sort of it was that synergy of those two things happening at once, and we just said, you know, these women currently in kitchens need to get their due, but also what has happened over the years, over throughout the course of history, for women with respect to food.
Deepi, were there women in your life that affected you affected your relationships with food? I mean, do you have specific memories of, I don't know, whether they were meals that you might have prepared with other women or just talk of food? Tell me about that.
Sure. I mean, growing up in an Indian household, and any immigrant household, I mean, there's always a strong bond to food once you leave the place of where your ancestors are from. So my grandmother, my mother, my aunts have all played a role in shaping my palate from a child to an adult. And now I have two small girls of my own.
Aww.
So kind of continuing that has been really important. And so when we were coming up with these ideas and coming up with what women we wanted to include, we pulled so much from the strength that they've shown throughout history in their own narratives. And we knew that women and men alike, so many male chefs have alluded to having been inspired by the first taste their mother or their grandmother gave them at the tender age of 3 or 4 or 5. So this is not a unique story to myself by any means. This has happened throughout time around the globe in all types of cultures and places.
It's true. I mean, this book is as much about women's rights and cultural history as it is about food. And why, how is it that food is such a good vehicle to discuss all of these issues? Either of you, jump right in.
I mean, I can say I think that one thing we recognized is that in a lot of cases, these women, you know, we do have many women who are not necessarily chefs or cooks in this book, that they came to a relationship to food in a different way. And I think one of the things that we recognized in doing this is that in many cases, women didn't have access to another way to express themselves. They were sort of saddled with this responsibility to cook, you know, and when they were backed into a corner, they utilized food in a different way and used it almost subversively. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we refer to it as weaponizing food in one particular section because that is, in fact, you know, it was their only way to arm themselves and to sort of fight back or to earn a living or to be empowered in one way or another. That was the resource. So it came in handy.
It's amazing. One of the women that you profiled in the book is this influential food writer, M.F.K. Fisher. And you write that without her, you guys think the book might not exist. D.P., you want to tell us a little bit about her contributions to how we think and talk about food?
Sure. I mean, she was a pioneer. It holds true to what you just said. Like, when it comes to food writing and the emotional aspect and connection that we have with food, food coming in at different times of our lives, how it's come at a time of coming into your own or feelings of love or heartache. She eloquently put those words onto paper. She took emotions that we feel and transcribed them in a way and made them relatable because she used food as a metaphor. She was well before her time. I mean, I think now, you know, given it's been 20, 25 years later, people are still in awe of what she has done. Wow. And none of us would be here. I think who would write for food or write in any kind of culinary publication, we wouldn't have had this pathway had it not been for a writer like MFK.
You know, what's funny is when I read about her through your book, I started thinking about that Nora and Delia Ephron collection of stories, Love, Loss, and What I Wore. And I thought, wait,
yes.
This is kind of like Love, Loss, and What I Ate.
Yes.
Or Love, Life, Loss, you know, da da da. And because food has such a powerful connection that way. Although your book is not just about food, you've got these three different sections, innovators, instigators, and inventors. So how did you land on, I guess, that way of dividing up the book to frame all the stories?
Well, when we were deciding on who we would include in this book, one of the big questions was, does it have to be a woman who is a chef? Does it have to be a woman who invented a dish or created, you know, a specific preparation? And we realized that there were just too many different ways that women were related to food or connected to food.
Right.
So this felt like the natural separation, those three categories. So we have women who actually invented a dish, women who maybe advanced a dish or, you know, made some tweaks to it and made it what we know today.
Right.
So those would be our innovators. And then the instigators, I think, would probably be the most surprising section to readers. And honestly, for DP and myself, I think that was a surprising thing to realize, was that there was going to be this whole section of women that, you know, to use the phrase again, weaponized food or leaned on food to create social change.
I like weaponizing food
for some
reason.
Yeah, I think, you know,
that makes me laugh.
It's
I don't know why.
Someone coming at you with, you know, like a giant
a rutabaga.
Right, exactly. Throwing tomatoes. But that section, you know, is much more about women that utilized food to create social change.
D.P., in any of those areas, the innovators, the instigators, or the inventors, was there a particular story that really surprised or moved you more than others?
You know, there was a whole section that we have, well, not a whole section, but there's plenty of African-American women in this book. And I was actually surprised how much those stories stayed with me afterwards. We learn about history. We learn about African-American history from slavery to Jim Crow to civil rights era in school. When you're actually reading these stories and you're researching it, you realize how much the African-American diaspora has gone through and how much they've put an imprint on what we eat today and how we live today. And I, those women, from Edna Lewis to Leah Chase to Lena Richard, there's so many of them in there who have shaped American cuisine as we know it today. And I'm so happy that we get to put those in here, because I want, you know, I think both Steph and I, we want not just, you know, adult women, but the girls coming up behind them to understand that our history as women, our history as people in the food world, can be traced back to these pioneers, to these people who are just finding ways to survive, who are coming here against their will. But they made a way, they left their imprint on this land. Those stories definitely resonated a lot with me. And like Steph was saying about the women in protest, or women who use food, weaponized food, those stories as well. I mean, you think about the price of bread going up and you can't feed your family, yet, you know, you have in Versailles, you've got Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette having a ball. And these women come together, 7,000 decided to pick up their muskets and pitchforks and come down to Versailles and drag them out.
Oh, my gosh.
And the Russian Revolution, and they're all gathering in the streets because now they're being forced to take the jobs that men were doing, but they're off fighting a war. So the women are doing those jobs, but now having to stand in long lines because they have to wait for the rations that they're not getting. And they got fed up. And again, they galvanized and came together and changed that. The Tsar came down. Or in India with Kamala Devi, and how Gandhi led the protest for this taxation on salt that the British colonial government had put on the American, the Indian population. Kamala Devi riled up the women, and they said, you know what, we cook, we use this commodity every single day in the kitchen, we're going to make our own salt. And they went off to the Chaupati beach and made their own salt on the beach right there. So there's so many stories like this where, you know, as Stefan mentioned, they're not necessarily chefs, but they use that medium, they use that avenue and the vehicle of food to create the social change. And that, to me, has been one of the most, the biggest takeaways from the book.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, just hearing you describe those two stories, to see on a basic level how food can change so many things, or lack of food, how that can move people to stand up for rights, to go to war, to oust dictators. It is amazing. And another one of the wonderful things about this book, that it's a history book and a cultural book and a women's power book. And it's so beautifully illustrated by Jessica Ola. I hope I said her last name right. How do you... How did you tell her, talk to her about how you wanted to present this book visually? Because, boy, her pictures and the stories just go together beautifully.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Beth.
I was actually going to throw it to DP.
Okay, DP. You're up.
Okay, well, when Steph and I were going through the illustrators that we wanted to pick, we knew we wanted someone fresh and hungry and to give that opportunity to someone who's also coming up the ranks. And we found Jessica's work, and we immediately fell in love with how vibrant and expressive her characters are in her own body of work. So for this, we wanted to make sure that we continue that. These weren't meant to be models. We're not trying to make this look like, you know, some glorious fashion magazine. We wanted them to look real. We wanted the expressions to be genuine, and we wanted a place. We wanted the environment to show through. Where that epiphany happened, where that social change happened, where did that influence on that particular cuisine happen? So with her, we guided her as far as coming up with, you know, color palette and coming up with, you know, a mood board in a way for each one, like pull elements from this particular time or time period and use those as inspiration. But she's kept coming back with these awesome illustrations that just showcase our women in a new way. So we were extremely lucky to have someone like her on board. And she definitely, like you said, she made this entire thing just come to life.
It is. It reads. I mean, again, I keep saying it's a this, it's a that, it's a dessert shopping, it's a so-and-so. It's all these different things. And it's also almost like a graphic novel in its way. It's got that aspect of it, too.
Yeah, I think we just, you know, these women, I think so often history can read as very two-dimensional. And we wanted just to make sure that these women jumped off the page, and not just with the words, but with the visuals as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because these women they're such incredible characters.
Oh,
when
my.
You really put yourself in their shoes, or really try to think about the environment that they were living in, the time that they were living in, I think we just felt so much for them and through them that, you know, Jessica's work was so complimentary and being able to bring them to life.
It completely comes through. In addition to all these great stories and the beautiful illustrations, you've got some great recipes.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, how did you make sure that they were accurate and representative of the women who made them? They seem very precise. Did you have a favorite recipe, either one of you? Or both of you?
Well, you know, and the recipes our DP and I collaborated on creating the recipes. They're inspired by the women in the book. In terms of a favorite, it's tough, but I mean, I'm a sweets junkie, so the Girl Scout icebox cake. That's probably a personal favorite.
DP, but, what about you?
You know what, again, it's hard to choose, but, you know, there's a salmon recipe that's got some great Indian flavors, so I gravitate to that one. There's a Chinese five spice braised beef recipe that's incredible over some jasmine rice. So there's definitely enough between savory and sweet to get the appetite going, for sure.
I got it. Oh, that kind of covers the waterfront. My mouth is, of course, salivating, as it has been through this whole hour. You talked earlier, I think a little bit earlier, Steph, about women and the harassment and the things that are still going on in the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. And many of the most powerful people still in that industry are men. What do you think are the effects of that on women in this industry?
Well, I mean, I think it's been obviously incredibly oppressive over the years. It's been really challenging for women to come up in the food business because they've had to compete with men. I think in a lot of cases, you'll hear women in the food business discuss having to sort of push aside their femininity or adopt these sort of, stand and suffer attitudes and reactions to it. But I do think that recently we've seen, you know, such an incredible shift in really strong female leaders coming out and setting a new tone for their kitchens.
It's taken a long time, though. Why do you think it's taken so long?
It's hard to say. I think it's such an ingrained sensibility that, you know, it started in a lot of cases it gets referenced back to, you know, French kitchens where the chef ran a brigade system, and you know the
meaning what?
So the brigade system in the culinary world is very much what it sounds like. It's based on military ranking. So you come in, you do your work. You're not expected to really have much emotion. You work, in some cases, you know, 16, 20 hours a day, I think some of these people.
And you have your very limited role.
Yes,
you do
exactly,
what you do and someone else does what they do and so on and so on.
And you're meant to fall in line. And I think there's a physicality of the work that women weren't considered able to physically compete or be on the same level as their male counterparts. Mm. So I think that all of these factors really became hard for people to imagine that women could live up to the same expectations. And I think that there has been a shift certainly in the last 18 months, but hopefully, you know, in some kitchens, even more in the last few years, that's a little bit friendlier, a little bit more encouraging, a little bit more nurturing. And I think, you know, feminine sensibility, you know, lends itself to that. But I think that I think the tides are changing. Maybe that's the optimist in me.
Yes, I hope so. DP, just I'll throw this last question to you. What do you want people to walk away from this book knowing that they might not have known before?
Well, definitely, you know, that history has long been written by men. So I think this is now giving people an opportunity to see that women definitely played a role when it comes to the food world. Our entire process, everything that got us fired up about this project was that we wanted to give them, these women, they're obviously due credit. Give women who are currently working kind of that pride that, you know, there was a long line of women before them who paved the way. But also for the future generation, for the young ones who are coming up, that they can get as fired up and as excited about a career in food. And it doesn't have to be just cooking food. It can be inventing something. It can be something that changes the way we perceive the world. So inspiring current generation, inspiring the next generation, that was our biggest driver in this, whether even five girls read this book and decide to be the next leaders of whatever field they choose. You know, it doesn't have to be necessarily food.
DP, that's so great. I've got to cut you off. Thank you so much. Steph Ferrari and DP Alawala will be at Books Are Magic in Brooklyn this Friday at 7:30 p.m. Thanks for your beautiful book.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.